All my life, I swore to myself that I would never hitchhike. I'd seen enough horror movies to know that that was a very bad idea. Besides, I grew up in Riverside, and I'd literally never seen anyone hitchhike in real life before. Then last spring, I was visiting my cousins in Central Oregon, and I found myself stranded on the side of the road. It was rainy and cold. I was driving back from my cousin's house when my car blew a tire. I'd gotten flat tires before, but I never learned how to change one. I'd always just call AAA and wait for someone to come by and help me. But this time, I was in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by trees and mountains, and I couldn't get a signal on my phone. I also didn't have a spare. Aside from a gas station that I'd passed an hour ago, there weren't any buildings around, just one long stretch of highway through the trees. With no signal and no place to walk to, I went to the side of the road and held out my thumb. I waited for 10 minutes before a car came, but it didn't stop. I was angry, but I also knew that if I were that driver, I'd probably do the same thing. 5 minutes later, an old truck came driving by, and it actually stopped. Unlike the first car, which was a new little Nissan, this truck really gave me the creeps. It was rusted and missing a window. The back was filled with piles of old wood. I didn't want to catch riding that thing, but I didn't really have any other choice. I approached the window and saw that the driver was about as unappealing as his truck. He was wearing a dirty white shirt. "Need a ride, ma'am?" he asked. "My name's Brian." I was about to lie and say that I was waiting for someone, but he'd already seen me with my thumb in the air. "Yes," I said. I took a deep breath and got in his truck. I didn't tell him my name. He started the engine and drove. "I'm guessing you need a mechanic," he said. "Just a place with a phone," I told him. "Whatever's close." He told me about a gas station that was about 15 minutes ahead. He promised to drop me off, and he even offered to wait with me if I wanted him to. Despite his appearance, the man acted very nice. Too nice. I didn't trust him, but there was nothing I could do about it now. I was already in his truck. He tried to small talk with me for a bit, going on and on about how lonely it gets on the road. I didn't hear a lot of what he said. I was busy looking at the pile of fast food wrappers at my feet. His truck was insanely dirty. Then I saw a bit of pink sticking out of the piles of trash. I used my foot to push stuff out of the way, and I found a woman's purse sitting on the floor. "Are you married?" I asked him. "Very single," he said with a wink. I started to panic. I knew he was lying to me. What was his deal? I imagined that he picked up single women, killed them, and then kept their purses for trophies. There could have been another explanation, but that was the only one I could think of. I knew I shouldn't do anything to get him mad, but I had to ask. "If you're single, whose purse is this?" Brian laughed nervously. "Okay, you caught me there." Then he reached towards his glove compartment to grab something. I was terrified. I assumed he had a gun in there, or a knife. Before he could open the compartment, I screamed, "Stop! Let me out of here!" He grabbed the wheel with both hands and angrily swerved to the side of the road. "What the hell, lady?" he grumbled. I opened the door and jumped out. Before I could close the door, he reached into the glove compartment and pulled out what he was looking for. His wedding ring. "I was just gonna show you this," he said. "You don't have to be such a bitch." He closed the door for me and sped off. I felt like an idiot for overreacting. And now I was worse off than ever. I was still stranded on the side of the road, but now I wasn't even close to my car. I didn't know whether I should walk back in that direction or to keep heading toward the gas station. In the end, I decided to keep going forward. It didn't take long for another car to stop. This one was a Chevy sedan, much nicer than Brian's truck. It parked next to me and the window rolled down. The driver was one of the most handsome men I'd ever seen. He was dressed like a businessman, and he seemed instantly trustworthy. I asked him if he could drop me off at the gas station up ahead, and he told me to hop in. Without any hesitation, I got in, and we drove off. The man said his name was Cody. I told him my name, too. We talked for a while. He told me about his work as a surgeon. Unlike my time in the truck, I felt absolutely safe with this new guy. In fact, I thought about asking for his number after he dropped me off. He was handsome, successful, probably rich. After a while, I noticed the gas station up ahead. I almost didn't want to get out because I was really liking this guy. But when we reached the gas station, he didn't stop. In fact, he sped up. I told him that we passed it, and his crooked grin disappeared. His expression got really dark. "When I told you I was a surgeon," he said, "I guess you thought I did it professionally. It's actually more of a hobby." With one hand on the wheel, he reached his other hand into his pocket and pulled out a scalpel. "You're going to cut you," he said. The car was going ridiculously fast now. The trees blurred by. I couldn't jump out, so I had to think of a way to reason with him. "Please," I said, don't hurt me." With his eyes still focused on the road, he slashed me across the arm with a scalpel, just to show that he meant business. I grabbed my arm, but that did nothing to stop the blood. Then two headlights appeared behind us. They were high beams glaring into the back window. They got closer and closer. Someone was behind us, tailgating us. "This guy is a psychopath," Cody said. I scoffed under my breath. "Takes one to know one," I muttered. The headlights got closer. They got so close that the front of the vehicle rammed against the back of our car. Cody lost control of the steering wheel and swerved to the side. We almost drove straight into a tree until he slammed on the brakes. Behind us, a truck parked and its driver got out. I saw through the window that it was Brian. He had run us off the road. Despite how I'd treated him before, he just saved my life. But I wasn't out of the woods yet. I was still trapped in this car with Cody. He was still holding the scalpel. Angrily, Cody shoved the scalpel into his pocket. Brian stepped up to his window and asked Cody what the problem was. "You ran me off the side of the road," Cody said. "That's the problem." "So you were minding your own business," Brian said. Then he looked at me. "Is that right, ma'am?" I glanced at Cody, afraid that he'd hurt me if I said anything about him. Cody just smiled at me. And then in a burst of motion, he pushed open his door, slamming it against Brian. Brian fell backwards, and Cody tried to make a run for it. Brian grabbed him by the leg and pulled him onto the ground next to him. The two men started punching and kicking each other, but that didn't last long. Sirens filled the air and two police cars arrived. The cops ran out and grabbed Cody. Honestly, they were sort of doing him a favor, because Brian had already given him a black eye and what looked like a broken nose. As the police took Cody away, the trucker picked himself up and walked toward me. He didn't have a bruise on him. "Are you okay?" he asked. I nodded. "I recognize this car from the news," Brian explained. "It's been connected with a string of murdered women along this highway. When I saw it speeding past the gas station, I knew there was a problem. And somehow, I knew you were in trouble." I thanked Brian at least 100 times. Without him, I would have died. Since this happened, Cody was sent to jail. He pled guilty to 4 murders, but I'm pretty sure there were more. I got my tire fixed and headed back home. I never saw Brian the trucker again, but I'll always remember him.
I take the chance every time to pursue the purest form of liberty I can find, away from the humdrum of social population and all that it brought. Since I was 19, I could hardly bring myself to live in one place for too long. I enjoyed the breeze of the morning crashing against my face at the first crack of dawn, without the hindrance of mundane things causing me bother. I had smelled the evening as I escaped with it, blending in the snaking paths that sprawled lifelessly through roadways and scrubs. I had been drowsy while I walked, keeping my mind straight at the next stop, whichever it was that I knew I would never settle in. But nothing prepared me for what would be one of the strangest evenings ever as I made that walk through the slumbering desert paths, marching with the rucksack on my back bearing all of my possessions and my water. I had enough common sense to be wary of cars that came up along the road and were in a very jolly mood to pick up strangers. They were either too dangerous or too stupid. In any way, they could not be trusted. But I had no such fears when the large white Ford SUV slowed to a halt beside me. You lost? A woman, dirty blonde hair, blackened lips, and plump, called to me. I shook my head. Hitchhiking at such a time can be dangerous, you know that? I smiled back at her. I knew that. I flipped my device out of my pocket, and there was scarcely any cell coverage for where I was from my provider. The engine of her vehicle revved in my ears with an assurance of company. A subtle breeze coasted across my skin as I provided her with the map of my route, yet to utter a word to her.
Ah, just where I'm headed, she said,
gesturing with her hands for me to get into her vehicle. I was tempted. I hated the small talk that most commuters often suspected I needed. But one glance in the distance, seeing the oncoming blanket of nightfall snatching the innocent orange sunlight into its fold, was all I needed to know. I needed the trip in the vehicle.
I've got some pastries to deliver in Miller's Cross, a small town from here, and I'll drop you off,
she seemed to insist persuasively. I conceded and hopped into her vehicle, taking a seat by the passenger's side. She looked at me, away from the road, and flashed me a grin that I was undecided about. Perhaps it was the way that her eyes glazed when she smiled with a fulfillment which made me uneasy, or the fact that I could perceive how shallow the beam was from the way that her lips cracked, contorting upwards to reveal a set of chipped teeth. The smell in the vehicle crawled into my nostrils slowly. There was a damp funk suffocating under the aroma of her pastries, which she had slightly open as though an invitation. An unruly insect buzzed into the vehicle and offered temporary distraction to the awkward silence that I shared with the stranger. She cussed violently and swatted her hands this way and that to rid the car of the insect.
God damn you beast,
she said when the insect buzzed away. Then she heaved.
Terrible country this is.
I could tell. I simpered and nodded.
My name is Chris,
she said with a pronounced pause for me to fill in. Chance, I replied.
Huh, beautiful name. I'll be sure to remember it, she said.
I thought that it was odd that she would say that to me, as I barely ever met the same people twice in my hitchhiking trips. I mentioned it to her, and we laughed about it for some time, before she offered some of the pastries that I might want to have. I refused. She insisted with that effusive charm of hers that wore down my senses.
Just one of the pastries, she said,
flipping the covering over to show off the fine assortment of oven brown flour. The scent filled my nostrils and I grabbed a piece.
They are delicious,
she said to me, and flicked her head, suggesting I have them. My phone buzzing in my pants called my attention. I sighed in relief, knowing I had finally passed by an area with good cell reception. I brought my phone from my pocket to check for my messages when she flipped.
Put that device away and eat the damn pastries,
she barked. Her voice was the haunting timbre of desperation. An unsettling yawn that stretched out after it had been uttered followed. I was perplexed by it. Excuse me? She began to ramble, swerving the car across the road in annoyance that I had brought my phone out of my pocket. I broke a batch of sweat which trickled down the side of my face in panic as the car whipped this way and that. My fear was not immediately for my safety, and I did not quickly assume it was. I had hoped it was an episode that needed to pass.
I said, eat the damn pastries!
She barked again, her greasy face quickly turning beetroot red as she spoke in anger. Her insistence on the pastries made me wary. I had the thought to slip out of the car, jump onto the road, and find an escape, but even that would be foolish because if I was incapacitated, I would be no match for the visibly irate lady. I tried to ease myself, but I was so shaken by her display of grievance that I could not sit still. As though her yelling did not pass her message across, she slammed her hands on the dashboard furiously, ordering me to eat the pastries. When I did not, she tilted. She reached her hands to her side and fetched out a maroon-stained cudgel.
Mother!
She swore, swinging the weapon directly at me. The car drifted out of her control, but she was so crazed by my stubbornness that she paid no mind to it.
Unlucky bastard! You're not getting away from me!
Realization dawned, and a thin veil of lulling dreams slipped from my eyes. I was in danger, and terror filled me with such sharp anxiety. The cudgel caught me on the forehead, and it felt as though the world around me had suddenly exploded because I suddenly fell deaf. With my senses that remained, I saw her drifting in and out of my line of vision in her gesticulation. Death filled me with dread, and knowing that this strange woman and her strange behavior could do that to me made my head spin. "Damn!" I hollered, latching onto the swung cudgel. With all of the force that my arms could muster, I pried it from her and swung back 3 times in blind succession. Her body went limp, and I inhaled deeply. A strong fecal smell assaulted my nostrils from her loosened muscles, and I knew I could do nothing else but to escape her. I steered the vehicle off the roadway into the desert and jumped out once I found a safe spot to land on. After a moment on the ground, I recovered from the madness to find out that the vehicle had crashed into a rock in the distance. I picked myself off the ground and continued on my hitchhiking, still unable to make sense of the horrors that I had just encountered.
I was driving to my brother's new cabin in eastern Oregon. I'd never been to the area before, so I kept getting lost. I was supposed to be at his place by 6 p.m., but it was already after 10, and I was still at least an hour away. I was on a one-lane highway in the middle of a thick forest. There were no other cars on the road. Then, a truck appeared behind me. I hadn't seen it in the darkness because its headlights were off. But when it was just a few feet away, the driver turned on his high beams and blared his horn. At first, I thought there was some kind of emergency, so I slowed down and started to pull to the side and let him pass. That was when he rammed the front of his truck into my car. I lost control and careened into a tree. My airbag exploded in my face. I think my nose was broken. When I was finally able to get out of the truck was long gone and my car was completely totaled. I looked for my phone to call for help, but I couldn't find it in the wreckage. That's when the panic set in. I was alone and hurt on the other side of an empty highway in the middle of the night. I couldn't call for help, and I had no idea who that trucker was and if he'd come back. He had intentionally run me off the road, so I wouldn't be surprised if he returned to finish me off. I had to get out of there. I considered walking into the forest and hiding somewhere until the morning, but I wasn't brave enough. I decided to wait on the road and pray that someone else would drive by and find me. I had pepper spray, just in case. Less than a minute later, a small sedan drove toward me from the other direction. I thank God that it wasn't the truck. I stood in the middle of the road and waved my arms. I knew that hitchhiking was dangerous, but it was my only option. The car stopped, and I could see that a little old lady was driving. She smiled at me pleasantly and asked if I'd swerved off the road because of a deer. I told her about the truck, and she literally got out of her car and gave me a big motherly hug. She said everything was going to be all right. She could drive me to a hospital about 30 miles away. I got in her car and instantly felt myself relax. My nose was throbbing, and I think one of my wrists was broken, but I knew that I was safe. The lady and I talked for a bit. She said she and her son had lived in the area for years, and the road we were on had a reputation for being dangerous. Eventually, she turned onto an unmarked dirt road that seemed to head straight into the forest. She said that it was a shortcut to the hospital. I was too distracted to realize how strange that was. Why would a hospital be on an unmarked dirt road? We drove for a bit, and then she parked in front of a rundown trailer in the middle of nowhere. Looked abandoned. "Where are we?" I asked. "Home," she said. Then she giggled. I panicked and ran out of the car. I had no idea where I was going. I just had to get away from her. I raced past the trailer and into the dark forest, crouching behind a tree. I could see the old woman get out of her car and casually walk towards the trailer. That's when I noticed that the truck that ran me over was parked just behind the trailer. A young man, obviously her son, got out of the trailer and asked the woman if she found anything. The woman said, "Just a girl, but she's still alive. Do you want to go find her, or should we wait for one of the traps to get her?" "Traps?" I looked around me in the dark, and sure enough, I saw a bear trap sitting just a few feet away. If I had kept walking, I would have stepped right on it. From what I could tell, this guy and his mom were working together to capture and probably murder people on the highway. He'd run them down, and she'd drive by and pick up the bodies. They were insane. "Let's see what she does tonight," the man said. "In the morning, I'll go out and check the traps." They both laughed and then went inside the trailer. I had no idea what to do. I was too weak to fight them. I couldn't go anywhere in the forest because I'd step into some bear trap or spiked pit. I didn't have my phone. I thought about stealing the woman's car, but I had no idea how to hotwire anything, and I doubted that she left the keys inside. I reached into my pocket for my pepper spray, but even that was gone. I guess it had fallen out of my pocket. The only weapon I had was this bear trap. I swallowed my fear and leaned closer to the bear trap. It was chained to a peg that had been planted into the dirt. Very carefully, I pulled out the peg, then grabbed the trap by the handles on either side. Slowly, I carried it back towards the trailer. I couldn't make any noise, and I definitely couldn't do anything to trigger the trap. Somehow, I made it all the way to the front porch and set the trap in front of the door. Then I stepped back. "Okay," I shouted. "I give up. You can have me." Instantly, the door opened, and the man walked out with a big smile on his face. He was holding a butcher knife. I held up both my arms. "Please don't hurt me," I mumbled. I wanted to look as helpless as possible so that he'd be focused on me. I didn't want him to notice the bear trap. With a loud clang, the metal snapped shut on the man's foot. He screamed in pain and dropped the knife. I was able to grab it just as his mother ran out of the trailer with a shotgun. She shot at me and missed. That gave me enough time to run past her son and slam the butcher knife into her shoulder. She collapsed onto the porch, right next to her son. I kicked the shotgun out of the way and demanded them to give me their car keys. The woman moaned in pain as she dug into her pocket and pulled out the keys to her car. Without looking back, I stole her car and drove away. About 30 minutes later, I'd made it into town. I found the hospital and told them to contact the police. My brother ended up meeting me at the hospital. He was a big support as the doctors gave me a cast for my wrist. The next day, we found out that the mother and son had left their trailer before the cops arrived. All they found were bloodstains on the front porch. I know they're still out there. They probably moved on to another isolated road where they can continue their sick games.